Well, we'll keep trying until until we get it right. We're trying to get our calls in to Coleman von Kravesky of the Intercontinental UFO Galactic Spacecraft Research and Analytic Networks, and to young Bill Herman, who gave us an incredible kind of story a little while ago, well, 6 months ago when we first started these shows, and about his experiences that he had with some beings that those that are in flying saucer research have seen from time to time. And while we're trying to get them, let's go to our callers and see what you may have on your mind. KABC, you're on with Bill Jenkins.
Good evening, Bill.
Yes.
I'd like to speak to you and your guest. My name's Andy.
Hello, Andy. As soon as we get our guest on the line, I'll be glad to speak to him, but right now you've just got me.
Okay, well, let me say this to you. I believe I'm the first caller tonight. I had a UFO encounter in Arizona 25 years ago, which was March 30th, 1955, and I am still suffering with a nailing elbow from that incident.
Mm-hmm. Andy, I think we've talked to you before about that.
I think you did, right?
Yeah.
But I just wanted to remind you that I'm still under VA doctor's care for this elbow.
Uh-huh.
And they send me my medication for it every month.
Yeah, did you ever get that information over to Lieutenant Colonel Stevens and some of the other groups that investigate those things?
Yeah, I think they know all about it because I've sent out hundreds of letters in the last 25 years. And incidentally, I want to emphasize one fact here.
Okay.
That I have sent President Carter seven letters in the last 2.5 years urging him to keep his campaign promise when he ran for president that he would release only UFO secrecy if he became president, which he has not done to date.
Well, yeah, he did make some statements to that effect, Andy, and I think what happened, and it's supposition on my part, let me say that from the very top here. Now, once he became the commander-in-chief and came acquainted with all of the facts and all of the thinking that's going on in the minds of the military about this matter of UFOs or alien beings and whether that's a threat or not a threat, that he fell in line with the general government thinking that has been going on for a long, long time in the United States, and their reasons just may be very valid to keep that quiet until they know more about it. I'm not so sure that personally I agree with all of that, but certainly I'm not acquainted with the facts. But there is a lot of this information that is being suppressed by government, and not just NASA, but all forms of government. They're looking at the kind of effects that that will have on what people are demanding out of government. If all at once we are aware that there are alien beings and it's established fact by the government, how will that affect the economy? How will that affect the corporate structure? How will that affect the way people think? And is the government ready to deal with this massive change in attitude that the people would obviously display once that information became a known and accepted fact? So there are a lot of considerations that have to be taken on the part of a man like President Carter or any man who sits in the office.
I understand everything you're saying, and I've heard it before.
Yeah,
let me just say that this. I have never received one single reply from the White House to those letters, which I resent deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And also, let me say this, and I would gladly say it to all the Congress and senators and everybody, all the government sources pertaining to this situation, that they have suppressed the truth from us Americans, and especially me, a victim of a UFO, for over 30 years now, and I resent that too.
Well, frankly, I tend to agree with you a great deal, Andy, and that's one of the reasons that we do some of the things that we do on this program, and, of course, a lot of the things we do that are not on this program that are trying to get all of these things together. But we do run into the security problem time and time again in piecing this information for you. But one of these days we'll breach it. We've put out a lot of information here, which is a little bit on the border. And we will continue to do so because there does need to be, I think, a new operation and a new understanding. And the people of the United States do not deserve to have their heads kept in the sand by their own government for much longer.
That's right, Bill. And let me say that as long as I live, that machine will never be forgotten that I faced in Arizona, no further than 60 yards away from me.
I remember you telling us about it before, Andy, and I can understand that that was probably a frightening experience.
But incidentally, give my regards to Bill Spaulding when he calls in.
Yeah, he should be in about a half hour. He wants to talk about the Meyer case and the testing of those photographs, and I'm delighted to have him on. He thinks it's a fraud.
How about having me on some night?
Well, we just may do that, Andy.
I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Bill.
KABC time now is 16 minutes past the 9 o'clock mark. We have 3 hours of just UFO talk, you and me, and we have a number of guests that will be floating in and out throughout the evening. We're having a little bit of telephone difficulty, but we certainly should solve that very quickly. You know, the U.S. Olympic gymnastic teams are now some of the finest athletes in the world. You know that? And now, for one night only at the Fabulous Forum, you've got a chance... are the identified flying object, or a great... about the flying objects. And I have on the line with me now, finally, we've had a little bit of telephone difficulty, but we are going to the East Coast to have these two gentlemen join us here. I have Coleman von Kavesky of the ICUFON, IQFON, who is with us, who is one of the leading and most respected UFO investigative organizations in the world. Coleman, it is certainly a delight to have you on with us tonight. Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, Coleman.
Yep.
All right, you're on. And also on the line, Coleman's in New York, and also on the line from South Carolina is Bill Herman. Bill, hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Bill was on our very...
a little bit weak to me.
All right, we'll try to speak up. We're going across the country here. Bill was on our very, very first show and had a fascinating story to tell us about his experience with some alien beings. Coleman, one of the reasons you're on tonight, I got a letter from Coleman von Kavesky earlier this week in which you laid me out pretty good, Coleman, about the information that we had been given the people about the what we know as the Billy Meyer case in Switzerland. The photographs, the testing of the photographs, we had been presenting that as pretty much a factual, well-accepted fact that those photographs are real and the testing of them has been real. But in your letter and in our subsequent conversations, you have reason to believe that that's not the case, that we are not dealing with a contact case at all, but a rather large fraud. Is that right? Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, did you hear me?
Yeah, your voice is very weak, Phil.
Yeah, well, I was just talking about the Billy Meyer case and the letter that you sent me earlier this week saying that I really should get the other side of that story on because it just may not be true.
Could we make a little bit stronger your voice? That would be acceptable and really...
Well...
speculating what you say.
There's I can't yell any louder there, Coleman.
You mean regarding my letter when I addressed you?
Yeah, you sent me a letter saying that you thought that the case involving Billy Meyer and his contact with the people from the Pleiades was a fraud.
Is that true?
Well, I tell you what, we're going to have to... try to reconnect with Coleman. He's in New York. Bill Herman, are you there?
I am.
Yeah, right, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Well, as we talked to you about 6 or 7 months ago, Bill, you had gone through an incredible experience. And I know there are a lot of people listening tonight that weren't with us that first night. Would you like to quickly go over that again, what happened to you? Hello?
In November of 77... I saw a UFO for the first time, I guess you want.
Can you speak up a little bit, Bill?
Yeah. In November of 77, I saw a UFO, and what began as some visual sightings turned into multi-sightings. In other words, a group of sightings taking place over an extended period of weeks in the local area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was of the impression that it was some kind of government military project because it was so close, the sightings were so close to the Air Force installation here in Charleston.
Yes.
Well, you know, up until March 78, sightings started in November of 77. And up until March of 78, I was completely convinced there was some kind of government project.
Mm-hmm.
But in March of 78, I was watching the object. It was about 9:30 in the evening. And I was watching the object move in the sky in triangle patterns, up, down, back, up and down, back, across the sky. And the object dropped to just above the marsh area on the Ashley River here in Charleston. And the next thing I knew, I was standing on the train tracks over here by the river watching. And the next thing I knew, I was in location 15 miles away, and it was 2 hours later. And it seemed to me just less than 5 minutes.
In other words, you were in one place, and then you were suddenly 15 miles away.
Yes, and I couldn't remember how I got there, and I was deathly afraid. I mean, I'm 27 years old, and I was petrified.
Well, as I remember the story that you told us before, Bill, that you've had to go through hypnotic regression to find out what happened there, and Dr. Jim Harder was involved with that. And just briefly, what did you go through as you look back over it now through these experiences that you've had?
Well, retrospectively, I had to go through some kind of session to help my subconscious recall.
Mm-hmm.
And to help me remember what happened to me. And I went through an extensive period of testing and regressive hypnosis and all this. And through that testing, it came out that I had actually been taken into the UFO.
You'd been taken into the UFO. Now, how many times have you been taken into that UFO?
Twice.
You've had two. Could we call those abductions, or did you kind of go on your own?
The first time was an abduction. The second time was more or less voluntarily on my part.
Curiosity, or you just felt comfortable doing it?
Compulsion.
To
go to a certain place.
What did you find whenever you went on board?
I found, the first time, like I say, I woke up on the table. And there were some lights flashing on the ceiling. And I thought I was in some kind of hospital room. Because when I was standing on the train track and the object dropped, it startled me. And I fell backwards. And I thought I had fallen and hurt myself and somebody had found me and I was in some kind of hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I focused and opened my eyes and all, I was standing, I was lying. And there were standing next to me three individuals about 4.5 feet tall with no eyes.
No eyes?
I mean, it's very late here. No eyebrows, no eyelashes. The eyes have it's like if you get a flashlight,
mm-hmm.
shine a flashlight to a cat's eyes.
Right.
That same kind of reaction. And the pupils, just dark. Brown irises, and the mouth like a slit in the nose was. It was very pressed in. There was absolutely no ears.
No ears whatsoever.
No hair any whatsoever. Just like human fetus.
You know, you're describing the human fetus kind of alien being that we've heard a great deal about. Certainly, Leonard Stringfield has talked about the fact that. There's a great possibility that some of those craft have crashed here in the United States. We've talked about here, and the beings they found on a number of those are very similar to those. Are you familiar with Leonard's work?
I have. You know, when I went to Cleveland, Ohio, to give a lecture to a research group there, Mr. Stringfield came down because we had talked over the phone quite extensively. See if there's any correlation between what I had seen and what he is researching.
What did you find out?
Yes. And the description of the entity is by some coincidence, if you want to call it that, almost identical except for the hands are described differently.
The hands were the only thing that was different?
Well, the hands on some of the entities he's studying. The carcasses or the corpses, whatever you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
there's some kind of webbing between the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the one I saw, I don't recall any webbing.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing that. Let's get back to that story in just a minute if we can, Bill, and we'll see if we can reestablish with Coleman, who is very, very deeply involved in this kind of research, in just a moment. Flying object, or the UFO, and in some cases some people think it's an IFO. And we've been talking to Bill Herman, who's speaking to us from South Carolina tonight, and he's been talking about a rather strange case he had in which on two different occasions he was taken on board one of these flying saucers and He has described the beings on board for us who were small, about 4 feet high. They looked like a full-grown fetus. And we're going to try again to see if Coleman Von Kovetsky is there. Coleman, hello. Can we hear you tonight? Have we got a better line?
But your voice is very weak.
Well, we're speaking 3,000 miles away.
Maybe I understood something. What do you say?
Well, I was just saying hello to you there. We want to get around to, what you have to offer for us tonight. We want to talk about the Billy Meyer case, if we possibly can. But I did want to acknowledge you there, and let's continue with Bill Herman's story about the things that happened to him. Bill, you want to continue that? Now, later on, you met with Leonard Stringfield. You went to Cleveland, and you identified some beings that he had found in his research that came out of crashed disk, and they were very, very similar, except in some minor with some minor discrepancies about the hands of the ones you had seen.
Yes, sir.
Now, in talking to those people, can you speak up a little bit, Bill?
Yeah.
Did they give you an idea where they were from?
They did. Well, they told me that the information on where they were from was a twofold source of origin. And I asked questions from what I could understand about the phenomenon, past cases that I had heard about.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me that they were from a place where we call Zeta Reticuli.
Zeta 1, Zeta 2 Reticuli,
yeah.
Yes. The
and
twin
they,
star system, yes.
Yes, and they said, when I say they, I mean to say the one who did all the speaking, there was three of them that
mm-hmm.
was with me at all times, but only one of them did the speaking. And they told me that they were conducting what they called direct observances in the continental western hemisphere. They were conducting experiments in hydrodynamics, and they were conducting experiments in reverse osmosis. Apparently they can take energy from the magnetic field of the earth and energy from kinetic energy, and they seem to do some kind of experiments with it.
So they're just, that particular group seemed to be here on some sort of an experimentation run on the planet Earth.
They mentioned geometry,
mm-hmm.
Geographical mapping, extensive, what they call a direct observance.
Direct observance.
Abduction.
You didn't find anything threatening about them, though, did you, in the experience
only
that you did?
The second experience. And the second experience that involved a being on board the object, and then we were in flight over somewhere between Charleston and Florida, and one of the occupants looked at the one who did all the talking and said, he says, kind of moved his head. I didn't hear any words, but I knew he said something to me, because the minute the guy did that, the other one looked at me and the one who did all the talking, and he said, "We are being observed." And the minute he said that, we walked over to a panel. It looked like a cross between a television set and an open window.
Uh-huh.
And we looked at that, and the it was like looking out of a window from in a high building, looking down on the ground.
Right.
And there was a highway, trains. It was it's like an orange glow to one side of the highway. And then there was like a straightaway, you know, like a long stretch of road.
Right.
And there was a car, two cars. And then it was like the picture, the image on the panel, it just kind of didn't zoom in like a camera zoom in. It was like it was at a distance, and all of a sudden it was a close up. Like the image got real close.
Yeah.
And the focus, the car in the front was it looked like a Pinto wagon, and the car in the back looked like a Buick, big
yeah.
Buick. And there was a woman in the Pinto wagon, and there was a man in the Buick, and they were both looking up, you know, from the car.
Right.
And he says, the guy who did all the talking, he looked at me and he says, "Watch what happens as we move closer to direct, to observe." The minute he said that, I didn't feel any motion. But the minute he said that, the woman jumped into her car and locked the door. And then the image focused on the door in her hand.
Hmm.
She was holding the lock on the door down, you know? And then the guy who did all the talking looked at me and said, "That's a foolish gesture if we wished to direct the bird." You know, it kind of implied that he had the power to either make her open the door or to get the door open if he wanted to take her.
But that was the nearest thing to a threat that you found out of this group,
right? Aside from that one statement, there was absolutely no hostility whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Coleman, are you there with us now?
Hello?
Hello, Coleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you familiar with the Billy Meyer case?
Not a single
word
what your partner said.
Yeah, it was a very, I'm sure...
I heard only your voice. That's a mink, but anyway, generally, I tell you acceptable.
We were talking to Bill Herman. I was just wondering if you were familiar in your research with what happened to him in South Carolina.
Yes.
You have known about that, and he was kind of relating that experience again with us. We do have a difficulty sometime in getting this back to you. And he was saying that the group that he had, that his experience was with, was not very hostile at all. They'd had one little slight gesture, which really wasn't kind of a hostile one, I don't think. Have you had any research into the same type of group, which looks like the like a full-grown fetus, actually, these people? Or any comment on that kind of thing?
No, I could. I, you know, I have now in my hand the UFO contact from Pleiades.
Uh-huh. You want to talk about?
Establish as a fact that my photographs, what I received from Yusuf von Jacobi, the 39 color photographs and the 9 slides, I could not find. I could find only 3 which are identity and published in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And those pictures, what I analyzed, those pictures are not in the book. For instance, I did not find Semyazis' picture. I have in my possession Semyazis and Ascat photos.
Yeah, let me back up here just, Coleman.
I'll send you by slide.
Let me back up. Hey, Coleman, let me back up and kind of acquaint the people with what you're talking about. There's a book on the market called UFO Contact with the Pleiades.
Yes.
Which has a number of photographs, I think 24 of them in there,
yes,
which are purportedly taken by a gentleman by the name of Billy Meyer in Switzerland of these spacecraft from the Pleiades. And they have been purported to be real. We have had people on the show who said that the testing seems to prove that they are. And one of the reasons that you're on tonight is to say that the testing is not true and the photographs are not true, that we're dealing with a hoax. I just wanted to give that little background to the audience there for you.
Yeah.
So go ahead. There are a number of people that have that book here in Los Angeles, so they'll be quite interested in what you have to say.
Bill, I give you a suggestion.
Yes.
Could I give you a recorded statement from New York City to send you over?
Yes, you can do that.
Now, we could not converse because the line is very weak between New York City and Los Angeles.
Yeah, you know? It's a long way to go.
Your audience would be interested. I could see the only one which is related with my analysis and the book.
Uh-huh.
It is.
That's what I wanted you to...
Meyer stated that the Semyazis spacecraft...
Semyazis is the female astronaut.
7 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And when we cut down, I have the photo of the Semyazis spacecraft. When we cut down 4 meters, only for the flange, it remains for the compartment only 3 diameter room.
Not much room, right?
3 diameter. Now, I'm asking you, as far Samuel, Billy Meyer stated that in this room was 4 people. They were Samuel Z, Quetzal, Playa, and Plas.
Yeah.
Plus the necessary instrument, you know, to pilot the spacecraft.
They would have to be...
I am asking you, how these 4 people, which height is equal as a human being, could be in this small room existing.
They would have to be very friendly. They would have to be very friendly, Coleman.
Yeah, it doesn't...
That doesn't give us too much room, does it? We want to get back to that, and by the way, I want to inform you that Bill Spaulding will be joining us from Phoenix, who tested some of those photographs, too, and he agrees with you that this is possibly a hoax, and we'll try to get him on the line, and we'll pause for just a second. Had a conversation with Bill Herman in South Carolina, who last year had two experiences in which he claims he was taken aboard one of these craft. He was hypnotically regressed by Dr. Jim Harder from University of California at Berkeley and was able to tell a story from there. That has not happened to him since then, although he has sighted those craft in that particular area where he works. Now, we had to let Bill go because the line was just, you know, too bad to continue with that conversation, but it is quite a story that he has to say, and he is a delightful young man. We also have on the line with us Colonel retired Coleman von Kervesky of IQFON, I-C-U-F-O-N, one of the really established UFO investigative organizations that does worldwide research. We wanted Coleman on tonight because he certainly disagrees with the contention of those that have been giving us the story about Billy Meyer and his contactee with the people from the Pleiades, primarily in the form of a female astronaut by the name of Semyasi, and Asket and Pata and some others. It's quite a cast of characters that they have there in that particular book. He says that this is not true, and he's done a lot of analysis of the Billy Meyer photographs, and we're trying to reach Mr. Bill Spaulding from Phoenix, Arizona, who is with the Ground Saucer Watch Group, who also has the same opinion that the photographs are not real and that we very well could be dealing here with a huge hoax or fraud. And we certainly want to get that side of the story. Coleman, you want to continue along with some of the things that you found in your investigation. I know you've been over to Switzerland and have been to the sites. And what's some of the other information you want to pass on to us?
General, I'd like to give an information regarding I find in this book UFO contact from Pleiades.
Yes.
A lot of statement from Semyasi.
Yes.
But I'd like to tell you, as far I have in my hand, Billy Meyer pamphlets on German language called of the Wassermann Time, which says that Billy Meyer is calling him as a savior of the humanity, who is representing Jesus Christ here on the earth. And he says that Jesus Christ is identical with the Emmanuel in the Talmud Emmanuel, and because he and Jesus Christ of the Talmud Emmanuel was born on the same day, February of 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Billy in the year of 1937, and Jesus alias Emmanuel about 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is number one. And the second, you know, he is with his forged and phony prophecy and statement, is this in discreditation of the thousand year of Judaism and Christianity.
Yes,
and
he does. You're taking exception.
Against his prophecy.
You're taking exception then.
Representing, and he says he's savior of the humanity. He has to transfer on a realistic field,
mm-hmm,
and save and help to the humanity to solve the problem against what we are facing for, as these problems are, you know, the,
mm-hmm,
inflation, the national energy crisis, political tension, poverty, narcotics, organized crime, etc. That's what we are waiting from the other space.
Now, here, now, Coleman.
And new prophets for new religions.
Coleman, in this case, you're taking exception to some of the things that Billy Meyer has been saying in relation to all of the photographs. We have on the line Mr. Bill Spaulding of the Ground Saucer Watch, and Bill has some exception to be taken about the technical evidence that has been presented in the form of the pictures. Bill, are you there?
Oh, technical evidence, I'm going to send you this week by... for your consideration.
Hello?
And analysis, and to tell your audience.
Okay, can Bill, can you hear us? Bill Spaulding, can you hear us?
I know him very well.
Yeah.
I know very well, Bilsman. Sure, I met him in Mexico during the International UFO Congress. I know him very well, and I am very familiar with his research. He is doing the IBM digitizer with a special analysis. But we are doing analysis with microscopic magnification and photographic analysis. As far as I have 50 years of experience on the photography and technology.
Well, let's get into that technical... Let's get into that technical thing, Coleman, in just a few minutes, and we'll try to get Bill on the line, and we can hassle this thing out in just a second. We just have about a minute before we have to break for news, gentlemen. Bill, welcome on to Open Mind.
It's a pleasure.
Hey, we've had all kinds of telephone troubles tonight, Bill. We can touch on it quickly. One of the reasons I wanted both of you gentlemen on is that we have done an awful lot of talk on this program about the Billy Meyer case and the authenticity, particularly of those photographs. You don't think that's the case. Bill, what has been your findings?
Well, we found these photographs to be similar to majority of the UFO photographs. This case differs in as much as the volume of photographs, and we believe it to be a hoax.
The whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them did you get a chance to test?
Well, initially we looked at 10 that were sent to us from a contact in West Germany, and since that time a total of about 25. By no stretch of the imagination have we looked at all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I don't think anybody has, because they're shrouded in a cloak of secrecy. You just can't get your hands on all these pictures.
Yeah, there has been a secrecy cloak over that for the last three or four years, I think. Later on, Wendell Stevens and Lee Elders will join us when they can get to us. That'll be about an hour from now, and let them comment on it. We're going to have to break for news, but let's get back to this because it is a big and an important case, and I want all of the input you have on Open Mind. Meyer case, it's called, with the people from the Pleiades. There is a book out called UFO Contact with the Pleiades. We've talked about that a great deal with Wendell Stevens and Lee Elders, who will be on later tonight as soon as they can get to a telephone. But we have on the phone right now Bill Spaulding with the Ground Saucer Watch Group in Phoenix, Arizona, who's done some testing of the photographs and says the photographs are not real, that we most likely are dealing with a hoax or a fraud here in the Billy Meyer case. And we have Coleman von Kavetsky in New York, and he is with IQFON, which is one of the large investigative organizations that ranges around the world and has been at this for many, many years, and they think they know what they're doing, and they just flat disagree with those that are supporting the Billy Meyer case. Gentlemen, welcome back to the Open Mind program. Bill, wanted you to get a little bit more into the testing that your people did at the Ground Saucer Watch Group with those Billy Meyer photographs. What did you find whenever you did check into them?
Hello there. Well, we all went for coffee, and they went longer than we did. It's going to be one of those nights with the telephones, and I didn't touch a button. It's just telephone-itis that does it to us every now and then. I know there are a number of you that have some questions that we have talked about, perhaps with the Billy Meyer case, and I would be... here we are. I have that down. Hello, gentlemen. Are you with me? Bill Spaulding and Coleman von Vyshynski, are you there? They're waiting.
So we'll go to some of our callers that are on the line that are anxious to get in here and perhaps ask about these questions. Maybe you have seen the Billy Meyer book. There's some things that you want to talk about, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. As we go along our merry way here on this night where things have kind of gone awry just a little bit on KABC at 9 minutes past the 10 o'clock mark. KABC, you're on with Bill Jenkins.
Bill?
Yes.
My name is John Deaver. I'm a UFO researcher from Fullerton, California.
Yeah, John.
And have you heard of our study we did titled Imaginary Encounters?
No, I haven't.
Well, I propose that we take volunteers who've never seen a UFO, never read the literature, hypnotize them, and see if we could get them to give us an imaginary UFO abduction.
Oh, I see.
And if possible, we would compare that with real ones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to our amazement, they did just that.
They did.
And they were able to come up with very similar descriptions, floating sensations, tunnels, talking without moving lips, and paralysis, amnesia. And it really amazed us.
Well, are you sure that those people had never, somewhere up and down the line, come across those stories that generally are associated with flying saucer contact?
Well, it's always possible. I've been examining science fiction books, comic books, cartoon characters, and so forth, and I find a lot of characters in these that are very similar to the ones that come out under hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not debunked or anything like this. I've seen a UFO myself about 50 feet away, daylight, and I know there's something very real there.
But you're saying that your investigation and your research comes up with the fact that under hypnosis, a person who has never been involved with this will come up with a rather believable story, huh?
And in some cases, he'll believe the story himself. It's so real to him.
Mm-hmm.
You've ever had experience with talked to people that have taken LSD or any other drugs, they too come up with the same thing. A vivid hallucination is so real to them, they can't shake it.
Mm.
It's realer than real is a common... And we have the same thing with our hypnosis volunteers.
Well, that's a very interesting aspect of it there. And I think it's important work if you continue that up, because who knows what the human mind is doing to us
there's
involved
so much
in all
there.
Of it.
It's really amazing.
Right.
I believe Bill Herman is a very sincere person. He very possibly saw a UFO, but I wouldn't give 2 cents for the story that came out under hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Harder knows very well about this work.
Yeah.
And I've been waiting for over 2 years for him to do a little research himself, seeing Dr. Sprinkle.
Yeah.
And they haven't done that. And I'm just going to try to get somebody else.
Yeah, well, we had Jim Harder on the show about 6 months ago in relation to the Bill Herman case, but he certainly has been involved in a number of other things. And he was very careful to say that this all still could be a manifestation of the mind.
Mm-hmm. Even Betty Hill was telling me last time I talked to her that she has been hypnotizing young people. And they come up with these stories, and it's quite amazing.
Yeah.
But she sticks to her story. She still believes that... I'm sure she saw the UFO, but what came out under hypnosis, I really question.
We do have a lot to find out about all of this, don't we?
I've got an article on this coming out next month's Second Look magazine,
mm-hmm.
if anyone's interested.
All right. Be looking for it.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you very much,
thank
John.
You.
Appreciate your call.
KABC Times, 12 minutes past 10.
Okay. Initially, we ran 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ran another 15 or so later on. And initially takes us back to about June of 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that these were sent to us is because we were asked with our computer equipment, which we've evaluated close to 900 photographs, to look at these very seriously and see if they had any value. And we reported back to the gentleman, the contact in West Germany who sent these to us, that they had none at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that three major hoax techniques were being utilized. The old suspended model trick.
Mm-hmm.
Computer technology, by the way, which is very similar to what Jet Propulsion Laboratory utilizes.
Right.
So it's very, very scientific method standpoint. I won't go into a dissertation on it, but we were able to find threads above these very small models. And we found usage of the double exposure technique and the double print method. You take a picture of the background, a picture of the UFO, you put it together in an enlarger, and get yourself a picture.
Uh-huh.
And none of this is sophisticated, whereas you would need a movie-type laboratory. You can do this with very mundane equipment. And, of course, our organization, which really tries to get into as much technology as possible, we just look at every UFO incident very skeptically, and then if something good comes out of it, fine.
Yeah.
And those numbers, of course, are bore out. We've only found something like 40 bona fide objects out of the 900 pictures.
Well, you know, we have talked to Wendell Stevens and Lee Elders, about the photogrammetric testing that went on with the photographs that they maintain are so far have proved positive. Doesn't necessarily mean that they are pictures of spacecraft, but is an object of such size and moving at such speed. What's the matter with their testing procedure? Are they not telling us the truth, or have they got just a different testing procedure that's not as sophisticated as yours?
Well, I think you're asking a very political question, but I'll be as candid as I possibly can. First of all, if one takes the time to run an analysis on the type of methodology that was utilized by Stevens and Elders, you'll find out that it wasn't very extreme. The people that looked at these particular pictures did not pass judgment on them. They ran some computerized pictures, which anybody can have done. A full analysis really takes a long time. The advent of computer technology just makes things a lot easier. You can discern things and have more quantifying evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But the equipment, I would say, is on a par with the same thing that we're using, which is space-age equipment. And no matter what lab, there's about five or six in the country that you can have this done. It's similar, but it's the evaluation that's made of it. I noticed in their book they made some reference about shadows and what have you. And yet that's just contrary to what four or five other computerized organizations, if I can use that word, people that have looked at these with this technique have found. So, and there's no explanation, or they don't even pose the question about linear structures above the object, which are used as supportive. If you notice in the book, all the pictures are light, deliberately light in the sky in most instances, which also helps to mask out supportive structures. There's a picture of a UFO that is superimposed into a tree, and they give some figures in their book that this thing is such and such a distance away. Well, by following the focal length of the camera, which we believe, I don't have the data in front of me, I think it's 42 millimeters, you can run all kinds of mathematical calculations and find out that none of this fits together. So we ran both a conventional, utilizing people from Kodak and Gap, which is the General Alkaline Film Corporation, and then the computerized method that GSW uses, which, again, is being used in the field of aerospace and medicine. And we found just obvious discrepancies, including shadow discrepancies, and many, many other things that you just could not say that these pictures were valid.
Have you told this to Lee and Wendell, or confronted them with the things that you found out? And what kind of reaction did you get if you did?
They don't really talk to us. From the standpoint, there's a whole story that goes with that, and again, it would take hours to get into that whole situation.
Uh-huh.
But this whole story, with about 20 ufologists that are working on this, is going to be exposed in Omni Magazine, Saga UFO, many, many other media are going to be getting what's really going on here, and they'll be finding out other things, such as about these so-called samples and other things that transpired that just absolutely make this to be an untrue statement and untrue incident.
Yeah, you were speaking of the rock and mineral samples that supposedly were given from to come from someplace other than Earth, and a sample of the alloy of the spacecraft.
The thing that I think that the average person should just look at, as we mentioned before, we looked at approximately 900 photographs. Of those, approximately 40 are bona fide. Even if we're wrong on our data, depending on how you want to play devil's advocate, say we were off 50% where there was only 20 bona fide objects, or say we were wrong the other way where there was 80 bona fide, then the important thing is there has never been an incident in the past 30 years where there has been repeated bona fide pictures taken. A UFO experience catches the UFO witness off guard. 99% of the time, they don't even have a camera with them.
Right.
And for people who take time to have a tripod set up and what have you, now you're getting into the other side of ufology, which we stay away from. We try to stay with the physical nuts and bolts scientific side.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get into the contactee side, which you can bring forth any kind of scientific evidence or individuals you want, and the people are going to believe because they believe that there's such things as space people,
mm-hmm.
which our organization doesn't, by the way. I mean, we're just here to prove the existence of UFOs and what they are, and not worry about in the past where they're coming from.
Well, like in the case of the Billy Meyer case, there's some months there, if he's giving you photographs, he's giving you rock and mineral samples and alloys, those are things that you can test. Now, whenever you start getting into the things that he is saying, that he is being told, there's no way you can test that at the present time. In his case, he relates time travel going throughout the universe and things like that. No way to test that. You can find out whether it is truthful or not, and you can go from there. Well, I think it was very interesting that I got your telephone number from Wendell Stevens. Said be sure to call Bill and see if he will get on the show and give his side of the story, which strikes me as quite unusual.
Yes, it does.
I know that there is a lot of other things that goes on with the ground saucer watch that you may want to touch on. And while we have you on the line, I'd like to hear about it because you have some fascinating work. Do you want to get into that?
Sure.
Let's do that in just a second, okay? The Ground Saucer Watch Group in Phoenix, Arizona. We've been talking to Bill about the authenticity of the Billy Meyer photographs as seen in Volume 1 of UFO Contact from the Pleiades. Bill says his group has tested those photographs, finds out they're fake. Earlier we had Coleman Van Kavesky on from IQ Font saying the same thing, and also certainly challenging a lot of the language that Billy Meyer is saying, or the things that are coming out of that experience. What else is going on with the Ground Saucer Watch group, Bill?
Well, one thing that we have been involved in for the past 2.5 years has been a first-of-a-kind FOIA, that's Freedom of Information Act, lawsuit against the CIA. For years, if you talk to UFO researchers, you'll find that they're putting their heads against the wall because they just do not have the conclusive, quantifiable data that they need to substantiate their claims that UFOs are from outer space or even if UFOs are real. And the one thing we found out a long time ago is that the government is withholding this information. People have unfairly blamed the United States Air Force, and they have been nothing more than a pawn in the total picture, collecting certain portions of data, more of a public relations type group. And when Project Blue Book ceased its function in 1969, they thought that the problem would be over, that people would forget about it. But UFO incidences are still occurring, and with this in mind, we started this lawsuit. And it has been successful. An example of that would be such as Russia claiming that the UFOs were theirs, and this could put a burden on our defense systems. There is an ongoing investigation, even though Project Blue Book is closed. And recent developments have led us to take another look at our organization's claims that UFOs, at least a small percentage of them, could be from outer space. Now, there's a lot of things that you can say about this to fight it and just disagree with these comments. But what we are finding is that the CIA and the intelligence agencies of the United States very well could be the cause itself of the UFO phenomenon. The percentile of bona fide objects is relatively small. Did you want me to take a few minutes and get into this?
Go right ahead. Okay. I tell you what, before you do, because I know you're going to launch into something, let me launch into something first and then clear the decks for you there. Phoenix, Arizona, and Bill, you're laying some different kind of information on us, those of us that are interested in what's going on in the world up there. And that you seem to indicate that you have a considerable amount of doubt if there are such things as flying saucers that are piloted by alien beings, but we have some flying saucers that may not be alienly controlled.
Yes, let me regress just for a moment here. Now, to set the record perfectly straight, our organization and myself, which I'm the director of, believe that UFOs are real.
Uh-huh.
However, there is a very small database of good information. Yes, there's thousands of sightings, but through that morass of information, there's a signal-to-noise separation that's just unbelievable. And when a person takes the time to really investigate any UFO incident, you'll find it to be a lot different than it was reported, than it was told to you, and what you first heard. And this is the thing that we're trying to do to find out, actually, what do we have in the way of real information. And there's approximately two groups of people. You have the believers who each UFO event is a real experience, and then the non-believer to whom each sighting is pure nonsense. And in between there is the truth, we believe.
Uh-huh.
And by regressing again, as I said, we have these thousands of UFO databases, in other words, these reports, but there's not one qualitative fact to support this ETH, this extraterrestrial hypothesis. There are hundreds of cases of UFO landings with humanoid creatures, but the majority of these instances are single witness events void of supportive data. There are too many UFO reports of landings, whereas if all the events were to be reported, there would be a factor of at least between 100 and 1,000 added to the existing numeric base. And by that I'm saying with all these reports of landings, these are just the ones that randomly happen. If they were all reported, there's just too many landings for us not to know more about UFOs. The data appears to support the theory of persons who have contact with UFO, that they're selected rather than the experience just being random chance. We also know that the CIA as early as 1949 has been collecting UFO data, and that the intelligence agencies appear to be directing and controlling all government investigations into this subject. Years after the closure of the Air Force's Project Blue Book, which I mentioned previously, representatives of the CIA are checking with the Air Force officials immediately after an occurrence of a UFO sightings. And then numerous FOIA requests and these documents that we've obtained from the lawsuit and from these requests indicate the government's concern. But this concern appears to be directed towards how much material, if any, was obtained on the incident as opposed to what scientific value the event contained. And there's also a cursory evidence that cattle mutilations are interrelated to the UFO phenomena. We have recent reports from law enforcement officers that indicate that observations have been made of all black helicopters with darkened windows, noise suppression rotor blades, and high quantities of electronic gear inside the aircraft. And all this has a lot of significance, and we feel that the American public is being manipulated from reasons ranging from the political to the psychological with the UFO. And it takes a lot for us to go out on the limb to say this.
Yeah, it does.
Believe me.
But have you got a hypothesis of what would be the motivation toward the government involving itself in cattle mutilations and perpetuating UFO stories and all of this sort of thing? Why?
Yes.
Why would they do that?
Okay, if you go back a couple years and everybody think about this, there was a lot of debasing publicity on the military intelligence community because of their clandestine involvement with drug testing and unsuspected humans and germ warfare experimentation with animals, such as all the sheep that died. And it's no wonder that the executive branch ordered all testing of this nature stopped immediately. This order, we feel, stopped all obvious testing, but most likely did not stop the U.S. government from testing in complete secrecy. We have to continue on with this because the Warsaw Pact is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most effective ways to perform germ warfare testing on animals in a very secretive manner would be the scenario that is presently transpiring with the cattle mutilations. Helicopters, which are generally reported as strange lights in the distance, are being used for nerve gas germ warfare testing on animals, we feel. The surgical removal of the animal's organs serves two purposes. It creates a shroud of secrecy and mystery and serves the scientific purposes of additional evaluation of the animal's blood and delicate organs in a laboratory environment. And this is one thing that we believe is being overlooked in this whole UFO cattle mutilations event. And those things are occurring. They are real. I have seen them myself, and I think it's time that the community, the scientific community, just take a look at the data and see if there can't be some interrelationship to this.
Well, I've never heard that before. Now, you're saying that it is the feeling of your group that, particularly in the cases of cattle mutilation, that this is something that's being carried on by the government itself as a cover-up of ongoing testing, which they had to stop in nerve gas warfare and other things of that nature, right?
Yeah, but the reason for UFOs is a manipulative device ranging from political to psychological. For example, if you wanted to test some of your restricted air defense zones and you didn't want to have a war game, you could have a UFO event staged just to see how effective our defense systems were. And as far as that goes, how effective the Russians were or whatever. A UFO appears to be a nuts and bolts piece of hardware, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's from outer space. And we're just trying to convince everybody that you've got to tackle this thing in some kind of a logic pattern. By all of us screaming that UFOs are from outer space, and I'll be open-minded and say that some of them very well might be, we're not going to get anywhere because of the ridicule syndrome that exists in this country with the higher educated person.
Mm-hmm.
Who is more interested in finding out what it is before we start saying, yes, it's from outer space and all these other things. And that's why I believe that these contact stories, although I find them very interesting and psychologically moving, I think they're really hurting the entire UFO movement, especially that of the scientific. And I don't mean that in a debasing way. I'm just saying this is what we're confronted with all the time. Because to get our point across, this lawsuit, we have got to have the support of the media.
Right.
And the media, of course, to be very honest, and again, this is the night for this, really doesn't want that type of a story. Okay, there were UFOs in 1975 hovering over our missile bases. That is not as interesting as somebody with all these elaborate pictures and contacteeism and the little creatures and all this. So this is what we're faced with, and it's very frustrating.
I can see that you have your hands full there, Bill, and that's a new side to the UFO story ongoing. I have never heard it before, and I'm delighted you gave it to us. Would you be interested in talking to some of our callers about that?
Sure would.
All right, let's see what we got on the line. KABC, you're on with Bill Jenkins and Bill Spaulding.
Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I was calling earlier, but sorry here, I'm a little...
Well, now just calm down, Joe, and
yeah.
Get
okay.
Jack together.
Yeah, he had answered one of my questions earlier about the photographs, because I have seen the book.
Oh, the Pleiades book, yes.
Yes, I have, about the Pleiades. And I thought it was quite a book there, and they didn't say too much in it. But that was, as I said, he had answered my questions. And one of the other questions I wanted to ask is more or less on the area of...
Go ahead now.
Oh, yeah, it's about... Someone Else Is on the Moon?
Yes.
The book by Keogh?
No. That book was written by George Leonard.
George Leonard. Well, I have the book, but I don't remember the name.
Yeah, that's a fascinating book.
I have a fairly strong telescope, and every once in a while I'd look up there and see some little flashes now and then. I'm not sure. It's sort of a crazy thing. No, but I've got the book, as I said before. I've seen the pictures there. And somehow they don't look right. You know, they just more or less look...
Well,
like
that's,
you don't see anything.
That's one of the reasons that Bill is on tonight.
Yes.
And by the way... Wendell Stevens is the one who suggested that we get Bill on so that he could bring forth his viewpoints on it. Wendell and Lee will be on a little bit later tonight, and I'll try to recant to them some of the things that have been said about those photographs. I imagine that they have heard them all, but maybe not. And maybe they'll get on before while Bill is still here, because they can go back and forth with it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right?
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for your call.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right. He didn't have a question for you there. What about in your group? Have you found anything about the moon going on, Bill? Hello there. All right. Have you, did you hear those questions, Bill?
No, I was cut off the ear.
Oh, that was good. I did it with my finger, my magic finger. I should know better.
It's only been the third time tonight.
That's it. It's been one of those nights. Now, this was a young man who had seen the book, and he thought that the pictures looked a little odd, and he said that you answered some questions for him. And he was asking some questions that come up quite often in the show about George Leonard's books, If Somebody Else Is on the Moon, and I wonder if you had any comment on some of the stories that are coming out about that.
Yes, the UFO story, per se, has left Earth and gone more skyward. And one of the places where there's a lot of information, a lot of books being written right now, is mysterious happenings on the moon. There's people who have said they've seen formations through telescopes. The astronauts, or at least the astronauts have reported, purportedly have said that they have seen various things and photographed objects. Again, if you take the previous scenario that I told you about, there is some work that was done a couple years ago called Alternative 3. And Alternative 3 is a book that was written by Leslie Watkins, I believe. And inside there's some things that we have checked out as far as we can that suggest that the United States is working on colonizing the moon. And I don't mean this from a science fiction standpoint, but I mean for specific research programs.
They're actually doing that now?
Reportedly, this is what's going on. Now, we have asked for a whole round of new documents that are related to this through NASA and other organizations that purportedly have this information. And once we get something substantiated, you've got to have the documentation before you can make any statements.
Well, that would require an awful lot of space launchings, which are very difficult to hide.
Well, I'm talking about something on a small scale basis. Most of these reports have talked about seeing mysterious towers or seeing lights, or even some people reported that there was craft up there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you have to put this thing in its perspective. A story up there is not any different than one down here, unless you have all that information. One, how do we know it actually happened? Two, what are the real facts? And three, what do we have to support these facts? And all I'm trying to advocate right now, that there is some theories going around that the government is indeed involved in something like this. And I can't quantify this, but they're even talking about, well, they realize that Earth is having a massive problem with carbon dioxide poisoning, and there's supposed to be all kinds of government documents and reports. And if we can get our hands on that, well, then that'll possibly open up some more information to some answers to the UFO mystery.
And you think you can do that in this lawsuit, maybe?
Well, through that, an FOI request, or we're going to find out how the doors get shut on us. And, again, it's the only alternative we have right now, or any UFO researcher has, is for getting information. The government has it. And you have to obtain it through the legal methods that are available to all American citizens.
That's about the only way you can do it. Let's get back to your comments on things that have been fascinating tonight, Bill, in just a moment.
This house looks...
where those UFOs may be coming from, and they may not be all that extraterrestrial in the long run. What other information have you been able to uncover you think you were going to be able to get?
Well, what we'd like to get is to clarify some of these stories going around, which there's 30 pretty good reports of crashed disks.
Yes, we had Leonard Stringfield on one night, and
right.
He was going into those.
I thought Len did a very credible job in putting that data together. But this is something that really has to be substantiated also, because it's one thing to go on a radio show, television show, and say the things that I'm saying or anybody else is saying, but when it comes time, your day in court, you've got to substantiate all this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to, unitedly, the people who are interested in UFOs, get our hands on the solidest data that we can. So we are going to pursue those efforts also with the crash disk, and we are running into one wall after another. Now, are those stories, are they stage events, or are we really being visited by some type of a robot, android, little creature that is here for God only knows what kind of purposes?
Mm-hmm.
Other things that need to be clarified is, if UFOs are doing what they appear to be doing from these documents to our defense system, whereas in 1975, as an example, UFOs hovered within 100 feet of our most prestigious missile systems at various NORAD bases and defense systems, and there's absolutely nothing that we could do about it. I think that the American people should be told about the UFO,
mm-hmm.
that the official stand is that UFOs officially don't exist, and people more or less just go on happily forgetting about it. But this could cause a very serious problem. Now, this country, if you think about it, the past couple weeks was almost put on red alert by a computer error.
Twice.
Right. And other things have happened from some of our spy-in-the-sky satellites, which the American public really doesn't know about, where an explosion in Russia from a refinery was interpreted as an IBM launch against this country. Now, if we're sitting in a situation like that with this Cold War situation, I think we need to rectify and clarify the total UFO situation so that some type of a mistake can't be made. And if indeed the United States government is behind the UFO phenomena, then we really have got to be concerned about what is the motivation, what type of a plot. If it is just to cover certain germ warfare testing or pose a psychological threat to a foreign country to let them think that we have advanced technology or vice versa, or who knows what the possibilities could be. I think that it is one of the more important problems that we all need to resolve. And the only way we're going to do it is jointly with public support.
You know, one of the things we pointed out often on this show, Bill, is that we formed a government, we the people of the United States, to serve us.
Right.
And if it's not serving us, then we kick them out and run the buggers out of office or whatever it is. And we have that right to know what they're doing.
Well, unfortunately, if you look at that also in its true perspective, the intelligence agency does not change office every 4 to 8 years.
No, it just stays right on in there. And
forever.
The problem is in the bureaucracy, really.
Right.
The military and civilian bureaucracy that keeps on keeping on with whatever it is they're keeping on with, and we have every right to know more about it.
But if I could just say a couple other things here in conclusion, we are striving to carry on with the lawsuit and this Freedom Information Act as far as we can go and get every bit of information on UFO sightings, events, and things that I briefly discussed tonight. Secondly, we're going to continue on with space-age technology developments from the aerospace community to evaluate UFO secondary evidence, which there are 11 evidences that we are looking at, ranging from ground markings to the photographic. Also, we are going to continue on with selected UFO cases, those that meet our criteria of daylight cases with multiple witnesses, because they tend to give the best indication of good supportive information.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if everything goes together, hopefully we'll be able to get some press releases here and get some things out to the public that can at least halfway be backed up by some documentation substantiation. But I can only stress to everybody who's interested in UFOs that you keep an open mind, that I don't want to say that the GSW has shut off the possibility of ETH, but again, if you look at the data, it's very, very slim, and there's a lot of things against it. I believe that UFOs are real, and it is one of the major problems that we are faced with in the 80s.
Well, when you get any of that data, you call me.
I certainly
because
will.
We'll put it on immediately. We have a rather large audience that listens to this program from time to time, and I'm delighted each and every one of them are there.
And anybody that wants to get in touch with us, they can write GSW in Phoenix, and we'll be glad to...
What's your address there, Bill?
Okay, it's GSW Incorporated, 13238 North 7th Drive, Phoenix, Arizona, 85029.
Okay, very good. I appreciate you taking time out on a Saturday night to join us. And as again, we have been kind of boggled by what you had to say, Bill, and it's highly appreciated.
And those people who, if you missed that, I'll give you that address a little bit later, or you can write me and I'll send it on to you. It's quite a group that they have going there, and we'll appreciate their input. KABC time is about 8 minutes of 11 o'clock. I think I pushed them in. Are you there? Well, we'll try to get them. They just got on the phone, just as everybody else got off, and we'll stay with them during the course of the next hour. I know there are a lot of you that do want to ask some questions, and we'll keep this thing going, right on up till midnight. I want to remind you that Tom Hall is going to be on tonight with a very, very interesting subject. He's going to be talking about Mount St. Helens and all of the volcanoes and things that have been going up there. Can we expect to see more of that volcanic activity? His guest should fascinate you, as that subject matter has fascinated us from time to time. Here on KABC, I'm Bill Jenkins. Open Mind program tonight.
Hey, Tom, Bill, how are you?
I am super. I wish you'd been on earlier. We had some detractors on for you.
Well, I wish you'd been on to hear what they had to say. I do have Bill Spalding's report from GSW here. Did his replies seem to follow the pattern of the report, or did he take off on a different tangent?
Well, he just simply said that the analysis they had of the photographs, and I think he said there were 20 or 25 that they had looked at, there was evidence of strings and that they were models and some technical things using what he said was very sophisticated equipment that they use that just said that the pictures were not real.
Okay. I have copies of the 13 frames that GSW analyzed. There were not 20 or 25. There were exactly 13. I don't know how many he analyzed, but in his report he said that he analyzed 10 of them.
Okay.
What I'm looking at here are prints that were made. They're about five generations down the line. These are photographs made with a 35 millimeter handheld camera with slide film in it through the plastic in the album pages of Billy Meyer's photo album, which were prints made from negatives made from the original transparencies. So we're quite a few generations down the line before they started to work.
Uh-huh.
I do have his main points here in his report were that multiple exposures of UFOs almost certainly make them a probable hoax because we don't have many cases of multiple photo experiences by others. And my only argument there is that there's a lot of firsts and a lot of bizarre things. However, I can think of at least six other cases that do have multiple photographic experiences in the case that are almost incontestably valid. The case going on over at Charleston is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others. And you've met Bill Herman. You had him on the line there, so you know a little about him.
Yes, we had him on earlier tonight.
The next major point that I see in the report here is his statement that the clarity of image denies the legitimacy of the photograph. That usually UFO photographs are inarticulate lights, I'm quoting that, or discs or other objects devoid of detail. And yes, there are a lot of such photographs. Probably 80 or 90% of the photographs alleged to be UFO photographs are exactly that. But in his own testing, he's eliminated a large percentage of those as misperceptions and possible hoaxes. Another point in his report here, am I following the pattern that he was...
You're going right down the line with him.
The next point was that he worked with 10 original photographs. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, he didn't have any original photographs, and all of the originals were shot on diapositive film as slide transparencies. The next point, major point in his report here is that the sharpness of the UFO image compared to other features in the picture, which are extremely out of focus, indicates the closeness to the camera. Now, you have a lot of listeners who have the books in their hands, and if they'll turn to any page in the book, they'll see that all of the image data throughout the photograph is in about the same degree of sharpness to the human eye. We find differences when we put it in the computers, though. We find a gradient sharpness from the focal plane of the camera out to the horizon. But they are all apparently sharp, so I don't know where that comes from, except I'm looking at the 10 pictures that he analyzed, and there's only 4 of the 10, and of the 13 that he had to work with, there were only 4 that had background information in them at all. So it may be coming, his problem may be coming from the sampling that he was working with, and as I say, there were quite a few generations down the line. I've got 3 or 4 more points here. You want to talk about something else and come back to them?
Well, go ahead. Let's get
way because they were taking some good shots at you, and we want to get both sides of this coin out tonight.
All right. The next major item in his report is a, quote, suggestion of a linear structure above one of the objects. I don't know which picture he refers to, but I can see what he calls linear structures on several of them, and these are the striation lines in the plastic that the prints were mounted in from which the slides were shot.
Oh, so I see what you're saying. That was part of the mounting of the photograph that they took photographs of.
Well, all plastic sheets have they have lines like movie film when it's pulled through a reel enough times to get streaks on it.
Right.
And the plastic sheets have these, and if they're photographed in sunlight, those streaks pick up a shadow. He's probably got a lot of such artifacts, he calls them, and he's probably got more than vertical ones. He's probably got angle ones and horizontal ones also, but mostly in one direction as the plastic flows on the sheet.
Well, have you confronted Bill Spaulding with this information or rebuttal to...
No, I never have. I just got the report, a copy of his report in my hands here a few days ago, and I was just reading it just before we went on the air here. Another point he makes is that the spatial placement of the UFO is a question. And by that he means the distance of the UFO from the lens of the camera. When we look at them in the computer, we give them spatial relationship by three separate methods, and then there are some others too. But basically, we work on the blur factor. We study the amount of blur of the object with relationship to objects near or beyond it. And the rate, the amount of blur beyond the infinity setting or beyond the true focal plane of the camera can be detected by a computer. But the fact that it's a very exact science, and it's reduced to a formula based on shock lines that on which the cruise missile system is based. And this formula and this procedure is the thing that keeps the cruise missile from running into objects and structures. It can tell exactly how far objects are ahead of the cruise missile, and we're using the same formulas to determine distance from the lens. We can set all of that aside and look at it in terms of gray factor. And again, the amount of, this is if we have anything suspended in the air, smoke, moisture, or anything like that. And the amount of gray will tell us whether the object is nearer or farther than any other object in the picture. And this will give us a spatial relationship of the object with any other objects in the picture, the UFO with any other objects in the picture. And this will generally agree with the analysis we made on the blur factor. Now, we can set both of those aside. Incidentally, when we're looking at the blur factor, we can also tell from the amount of blur which direction the object is moving and about how fast it's moving. Because there's a difference in the shock lines generated around the edges of the object. The shock lines are closer together in the direction of motion and farther apart in the trailing edge. And the relationship between the shock lines on one side and the shock lines on the other tells us exactly how fast it's going. We can even tell which direction it's moving. And we're doing this from a two-dimensional photograph. Now, we can set all of that aside again. And we'll study it again based on chroma shift of the small corona around the color granules in the color emulsion. The principle here is that the nearer light travels, or the shorter the distance light travels from the object to the lens, the more red it will have in it. The further it travels, it will shade the blue and then the green on the horizon. So it's a red shift value that a computer can distinguish. And it'll put everything in spatial relationship, one thing with another, after we take out the redshift caused by re-photographing, which is a little bit difficult, but it can be done. We can also look at these things in terms of light scatter, and it tells us approximately how big the radius of curve is that's reflecting the light. And this can tell us whether it's a small model close to the camera or a large model further away, and several other things.
Well, basically, you're telling me, Wendell, then, that number one, that Bill Spaulding and his group at the Ground Saucer Watch were using as their test photographs, photographs of photographs that were taken, and puts them down four or five generations from the original at best.
I would say they were using photographs of photographs of photographs.
And then secondly, they weren't using quite the sophisticated kind of technology that you and your group have been using in testing and analyzing those photographs.
I don't think they even got into it, because I went out to Spatial Data Systems at Goleta, California, who does their work for them on contract, to find out exactly what they were doing, and they were only doing four basic steps. The rest is extrapolation of those steps.
I see.
The Spatial Data people told us that they didn't consider this
a detailed analysis. It was they called it a cursory analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go into a seminar in San Diego of all computer designers, or most of the major computer designers and computer graphics people, to get a consensus of opinion of how to proceed, and we invented as we went designing new techniques for the report that Jim Delatorre came up with.
All right. In a moment, I want to lay some of the things that Coleman von Kubeski had to say about the Billy Meyer experience. If I may, he was on earlier this evening, and that's always quite interesting to be with Coleman. Back to you in a second. A number of things to say about the testing that his organization, IQFON, had done on the photographs that they had. It wasn't quite as scientific and as technical. We didn't have a good connection to Coleman earlier, but he was talking about one of the photographs in which Billy Myers claimed that he and three others were inside the photograph. Just wouldn't leave enough room for four people to get inside. Are you familiar with what photograph that may be?
Well, there's a whole series of photographs. I think there's 24 shot roll that have been double exposed that show as many as seven people in some of the frames with the UFO above them. But we can separate those two pictures at a computer, and one is a picture of the people standing on a hill, and another is a picture of the UFO flying over a valley. That roll was used the second time when Mr. Meyer shot up another roll and thought he had an extra roll, and he put the wrong one in the camera and reshot one of them over again, losing those 25 pictures. But they did come back on slides. We have had them printed. They are double exposure. There is no evidence at all that he ever photographed or ever claimed to have photographed pictures of the UFO flying over the heads of people.
Mm-hmm. He also talked about some of the claims of Billy Meyer, getting into area really that just can't be tested, that he is like the 14th disciple of Jesus and has had a number of rather incredible experiences with time travel and is working very hard to discredit Christianity and Judaism.
Well, I don't know where he got the information. I've been there 39 days total, cumulative time, living in the house with a man, and I haven't encountered any such information. I would prefer that he answer that. There are a lot of bizarre things here, but I've certainly never heard that come up.
I think he was referring to a booklet that Billy Meyer may put out, the Waterman Times or something like
Skimmer,
that.
Yeah, Skimmer the Waterman.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And which some reference was made to that kind of thing.
Well, I have those books, but I can't read them in German. I am not aware of any such statement made in the books at all. I will try to find out, but I have never heard this, and I can't comment on it. It's new to me.
And he was also critical about one of Billy Meyer's statements and a photograph on one of his trips that he went into the Dahl universe and took a picture of the Eye of God. Do you know anything about that?
I know where he's getting that statement, and that's a misunderstanding by a man called Hans Jakob, who is running for public office in a rural district, a state of Switzerland. And Switzerland is rural in that part of the country, and UFOs are not popular. And this man is trying to dissociate himself from earlier contact with the group by making several such statements. The photograph that he's talking about, I've never seen, and I don't know anything about it. I talked to Mr. Hans Jakob, and he told me that such a picture had been taken, but he wasn't able to support it when I was there. And I'm wondering what Mr. von Kubeski saw, if he saw the Eye of God.
Well, that was what he was wondering.
Well.
All right, let's get to some callers here who may have some questions for you, Wendell, about the Pleiadian thing. And we have some other comments I would like your comments on from Bill Spaulding that are quite incredible about cattle mutations and some of the other things that may be happening in this whole UFO phenomenon. You know, you and a friend can be the guest of The Gap and KABC to the All-Star Game with Dinner on the Town.
Questions for the Colonel.
Okay.
The first is, I would like to know, I understand that Jim Lorenzen from Tucson had at first endorsed the book, and I believe I read in the Zetetic, or which is now the Skeptical Inquirer, that he's withdrawn his endorsement and says that Billy Meyer is making models of UFOs. I'd like to hear his comment about that. The other thing is that I had the pleasure of meeting Britt Nielsen Elders in Phoenix not too long ago, And in our conversation, she mentioned that John Glenn had had four separate incidents. And I'd like to hear those. Britt did not go into it at the time.
Did you catch that question, Wendell?
I didn't. Just tell me, what was the question, the first part?
First question was in reference to Jim Lorenzen of Abro, saying that he first supported the book and now he has withdrawn his support, saying that that they were models. And there was another part that our caller, Mary, had on a recent trip to Phoenix met Britt, Britt Elders. And in that conversation, Britt had mentioned that John Glenn had had four different experiences, and that was about all she said, and she was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Okay, well, I know about Jim Lorenzen's statements. We never said that he endorsed the book, and he never said that he endorsed the book until after it was out. And then he said that we had claimed that he endorsed it when we never did. If you look in the book, the only reference made to Jim Lorenzen is the fact that he heads the organization APRO, which is the oldest, one of the oldest UFO research organizations in continuous existence in the world. The only thing that might have been construed as an endorsement was a thing that Jim Lorenzen himself wrote that we published on the flyer that said, it looks to me like there's too much evidence here to safely ignore. And that's all. I don't know how anybody calls that an endorsement. I don't know how Jim calls it. Claims that we consider that an endorsement. And that was not included in the book. That was only included in the flyer mailed out to the APRO members.
And what about the John Glenn incident?
I can't answer about the John Glenn incident, but I do have another comment on models. In John Foster Watch's conclusions, item 5 says here that there were signs of manufacture on the models, such as bolts with sizes too large, bolts and rivets, with sizes too large in proportion to the model's physical size. Now, anybody that has the book, if they can look at any of those pictures and find any evidence of rivets or bolts anywhere in the pictures, and I have blown those pictures to 20 by 30 inches, where in some pictures I have the spacecraft model from 4 to 5 inches across, and still can't find, with a magnifying glass, any evidence of mating lines, rivets, or bolts.
Okay, Mary, does that help you?
Hello?
Yeah, Mary, did that answer your question?
Pretty well, thank you.
Okay, Mary, thank you very much for your call. You know, June is...
About 10 years ago to Thornton Page, and the director of the Van Vleck Observatory at Wesleyan University at that time, in response to a New York Times article by Walter Sullivan describing a UFO symposium held by Dr. Page at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the article, there had been discussion of the possibility that certain files of the defunct Project Blue Book may have been destroyed, presumably by the Air Force. Sullivan indicated that Dr. Page believed that the files may have contained, among other things, reports involving secret military projects. There was a book that came out in 1956 in German. It was called Brighter Than a Thousand Suns, Heller auf Tausend Sonnen. The English translation was 1958. And Robert Jungk, J-U-N-G-K, was the author. He had described in a footnote in reference to the indifference in Germany during the war of Hitler to research in natural science, that there was there were projects, and I'll just read the very brief, that the Air Ministry had been conducting experiments, and they had designed aircraft, Delta, Triangular, and flying discs. The first of these flying saucers, as they were later called, circular in shape with a diameter of some 45 yards, were built by Schriever, Habermoll, and Mita, these aerodynamic specialists, first airborne on February 14, 1945, over Prague, and reached in 3 minutes a height of nearly 8 miles, at a flying speed of 1250 miles per hour, which was doubled in subsequent tests. It's believed that after the war, Habermoll fell into the hands of the Russians. Mita developed at a later date similar so-called flying saucers at A.V. Rowan Company for the United States. I wrote to Page because it seems to me that if Jung's information was correct, that the Blue Book files may very well have contained reports of later U.S. refinements of the original German work, and perhaps these so-called UFOs were not so unidentified after all. If the Air Force intentionally kept Condon's group, there was the Condon report at that time, ignorant of such research, then perhaps the study was futile from the outset, and possibly with the taxpayers, the losers. Thornton Page wrote back to me
And he wrote a reply at that time. My letter was forwarded to him in Houston. He was an observer at the Apollo shots. And he wrote a handwritten quick note to me saying that he finds the item in Young's book interesting and tends to strengthen the allegation that the Air Force had kept parts of its UFO investigation secret. But he said he was on the Robertson panel in 1952,
mm-hmm.
and they had full access to top-secret files in all three services. He said that they found no evidence of foreign developments in U.S. Air Force development of a flying saucer except for one project that had been abandoned. And then he said that, in wrapping it up, he was sure that any aircraft of the type that Jung describes could not account for the large number of reports. They're fairly certain that such aircraft would have been picked up by our radar nets. So
mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know, and in fact, if you were speaking to Bill Spaulding earlier, I heard,
mm-hmm.
if in fact this was just a long series of developments, the refinements of the German work that had been done during the war, and perhaps I spoke to some friends at Edwards, and they told me a few months ago, in fact, that for the past 30 years or more, many small companies had been engaged in so-called saucer research with projects that largely went nowhere. These things may very well have been flown around this country or in remote parts.
Okay, well, Wendell, do you have some comment on that?
Well, it's a little out of my field. I've heard rumors of German research in 1944 on circular aircraft. The research that I heard was done in the Black Forest, and nobody knows who moved the facilities away. We don't know whether the Russians got them, whether we did, or whether they just fled the country before anybody got to them. There doesn't seem to be an accurate record of where they went.
We do have indication, I think, that one of those Russian circular craft crashed in Norway back in the 50s, and it was determined that that was Russian in origin.
Yes, I read that report.
Also, you got to remember, too, that Thornton Page is still very, very active in the government's evident quash of UFO information.
Yeah.
And works mightily at that right now from Houston.
One quick note. I have a copy of, it's a high school publication. I teach science, physics in high school, Science and Math Weekly. And it's an old copy, and there's a photograph of with a caption that says, excuse me, I have a cold. Saucers such as the test model pictured above have been in production for several years. It shows a small one with some men around it.
Mm-hmm.
A Belgian model is expected to reach speeds of 180 miles per hour. The United States and Canada jointly built the Avro, A-D-R-O, in the late 50s. It's now on display in the Army's Transportation Museum in Virginia. So again, there seems to be this, on the one hand, this trail of developments. And on the other hand, when you speak to people about these things, and I've spoken to some people at JPL, they claim complete ignorance of such developments.
You got any comments on that, Wendell?
Well, there were at least two versions of the Avro project, but they had problems with stability, and supposedly scrapped the project. I don't know whether that was a cover for something else or not, but those models are at Wright-Patterson now in the museum there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Joe?
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your call. KABC Times, 22 minutes of midnight. Hey, Alan, welcome to the Open Mind program.
Welcome, Bill. Well, hello, I should say.
Hello there. Have you had a chance to listen to some of the things we've been talking about tonight?
Yes, I have, and just want to give you a little bit of background, very, very brief before
say
I get...
Say hello to Wendell Stevens.
Hello, Wendell.
Hello, Alan, how are you?
Very well, you're a bit faint, but let me get right in. It's a problem you've been with us all evening. I want to say that I'm a member of the Aetherius Society, so we get that straight off.
Yes.
And that we are what may be termed as a contact group, but this does not mean that we have thrown reason, discrimination, or intelligence out of the door. Now, I have in front of me the Bill Myers UFO Contact book, Contact from the Pleiades, and one of the things that, looking at it with a reasonable amount of intelligence, the question that came up in my mind was that surely there was the April the 14th, 1976 incident of 22 attempts by a Swiss Mirage fighter to buzz the UFO in question, the picture of which appears in this book. But nowhere is there any investigative reporting as to what the Swiss Army or the Swiss Air Force had to say about this. I mean, here is something where we could really have jumped on the bandwagon to get some real information out from official sources, or at least get something. I mean, are they going to deny it completely? Have they denied it, in fact?
Wendell, did you hear that?
Yes, sir. We've covered that same question twice before on your program, but here it is again. The Swiss Army is very... It's a very secretive organization. It's very highly organized, like the Israeli Army. They don't let out any secrets. They will not allow an investigation of that Swiss Mirage jet fighter pass on the UFO. They will not let us go to the base they came from. We do know what base it came from. We have talked to a ground maintenance man who said that it took 2 weeks to repair the electrical system of the jet, but we don't dare to reveal his name because it would be dangerous to him. They will not allow any investigation into that area. They say that we must pose all the questions to them, to their superior office, in writing. We've done that. The answer back is that we must prove a need to know satisfactory to the Swiss government before they'll discuss any matters pertaining to military affairs and exotic objects.
Uh-huh. I mean, don't you, have you met this attitude of the official sources continue to bury their heads in the sand, that they feel that the problem will go away?
I think they're trying to sweep it under the rug until they have a better answer.
The only thing I want to say is that we've found, especially in the Aetherius Society, where we go back as far as 55, we know about the problems with photographs, and that's why one of the proofs, and I'll say that again, proofs of the contacts of the Aetherius Society, was a direct eyewitness sighting involving over 23,000 people in Australia. So we know all about the denials of government, but how do you think this UFO information is going to get much more of a broader base as far as the public is concerned, to really get information from official sources?